Good grief. Question everything.
Welcome. You're listening to Why, a Good Grief Network podcast with Amy Lewis Rowe and Laura Schmidt. Hi, and thank you for listening to this week's episode of Why, a Good Grief Network podcast. Today's question comes from Chelsea in New York, and she asked, what is our definition of grief, and why is it the cornerstone of our program? She says, I always associate it with the death of a loved one, and I think you guys are broadening that definition, but I'm not sure what that encompasses. That's a great question, Chelsea. Thank you for submitting it. So what is grief? Being the writer that I am, I of course first went to the dictionary for the definition, and the more I researched, the more I realized there's not one concrete definition because grief is such a multifaceted experience. It has roots in Old French from a word grever or griever. I don't know how to speak French, so I don't know how to pronounce that. But it meant to burden. And grief is a burden. It feels heavy. Dictionary.com defines grief as keen mental suffering or distress over affliction or loss. Sharp sorrow, painful regret.
Frances Weller, who is a psychotherapist, writer, and soul activist, wrote a couple books about grief, and the one I'm going to talk about right now is The Wild Edge of Sorrow. In that book, he talks about five gates of grief. The first gate is everything we love, we will lose. And so that harkens back to Chelsea's question with personal loss or someone dying, but that can also be extended to pets and your house and your car and anything you have any sort of attachment to. Anything that we're attached to, we will lose. So the second gate is the places that have not known love. Which places in you have not known love? Which places have you shied away from acknowledging? What within you have you not given proper attention to? We have talked a lot about shadow and shadow features. This second gate definitely corresponds to shadow features. So if you acknowledge the places that have not known love, that's another way of grieving. The third gate is sorrows for the world. So it is climate change, the impacts of climate change, the loss of biodiversity, the fact that there is now or very soon more plastic than fish in our oceans, the fact that we have just seen that mussels have opioids in them, those sorts of things, the sorrow for the world, that is also grief. The fourth gate is what we expected and did not receive. So for me, this gate seems like it's the social constructs, the box that they tell you to fit in. All of those create who we are. And so, for example, we expected that we were going to be able to reach the American dream. If we just go through school and get a good enough degree and work hard enough, then the American dream is attainable. But it's not. That with ideologies are these certain things we're sort of promised from a young age or throughout our lives that end up sort of breaking down. And then the fifth gate is ancestral grief. So it's the grief we carry in our bodies from sorrows experienced by our ancestors. Much of this grief lingers in a layer of silence, unacknowledged. Many of our ancestors arrived in the Americas after leaving their homes, family members, and communities behind. Some arrived here after being abducted and forced into slavery. These generations often survived without feelings of home, living with only marginal connections with the old ways to guide them, the traditions that had nourished and held their people for hundreds of years, if not thousands of years, were difficult to sustain on a new continent. By exploring some of Frances Weller's work, we know that grief has many forms, and the loss of a loved one or the loss of something we deeply love, it doesn't just have to be a person, is only one type of grief that we experience. We focus a lot in this program with the Good Grief Network. We focus on existential grief or planetary grief. And it's because for some of the other types of losses, we already have methods to metabolize that grief so it doesn't get stuck. With regard to planetary loss and the loss of ecosystems, biodiversity, species extinction, we don't have ways to take that into our body. We don't have ways to actually feel it. And it's not socially acceptable. So this is one way that we think it'll be really important to get back into activism or get back into looking at the problems is if we create space for this grief that isn't otherwise acknowledged.
Speaking of grief and gates, Marie Howe has a wonderful poem called The Gate in her book of poetry called What the Living Do, published by W.W. Norton and Company. The Gate. I had no idea that the gate I would step through to finally enter this world would be the space my brother's body made. He was a little taller than me, a young man, but grown himself by then, done at 28, having folded every sheet, rinsed every glass he would ever rinse under the cold and running water. "This is what you have been waiting for," he used to say to me. And I'd say, "What?" And he'd say, "This," holding up my cheese and mustard sandwich. And I'd say, "What?" And he'd say, "This," sort of looking around.
So, Amy, you've read that poem for me a couple times, and it's really moving, but I'm interested to hear you dig a little bit deeper. What does this mean?
For me, it's about the first couple of lines, which are, I'll repeat, "I had no idea that the gate I would step through to finally enter this world would be the space my brother's body made." Her book, What the Living Do, focuses on the death of her beloved younger brother. And the idea of, "I had no idea that I would finally enter this world through a gate that was created by the grief of losing my younger brother," relates to this idea of grief as a gate. And it also relates to why it's such a cornerstone of our program, is I believe you have to walk through the gate to get to a brighter, richer future on the other side. So the gate is also about mindfulness, which is what her brother would get. And she is, or the speaker rather, is saying that she didn't get it. And he would say, "This is what you've been waiting for." And it would be a sandwich. Or she talks about him rinsing the last glass he ever rinsed. And so the idea is not that the world changes when you step through the gate. What changes is your perception of it. And you're able to have a deeper, more fulfilling perception. So that ordinary moments like rinsing a glass or eating a cheese and mustard sandwich become more than just mundane activities.
Well, and why is this important for looking at things that cause existential grief?
Well, because with existential grief, it's bigger than us as individuals, which means it's too heavy to carry all the weight of it. And so I think it's important not to lose sight of the fact that despite the fact that we know all of this stuff is happening, we're feeling all this grief, we worry about our future, we still have what's right here, right now. And mindfulness is about paying attention to our five senses so that we can really take in our moments and appreciate them. And appreciation leads to gratitude, which we talked about in last week's episode.
Amy, let's talk about grief a little bit more, personal grief. This last week, actually, your mom was in a motorcycle accident. And we've talked a little bit about gates and openings through which we can experience the world more mindfully. But tell us a little bit more about, maybe if you're okay with it, with your mom's accident and how every day really is a gift, right? And how we never know what's going to happen and the sorts of things that this very individual, not existential grief does to us.
Yeah, so my mom was in a motorcycle accident this week and it was really scary. A turkey flew up. That's kind of a freak accident. She didn't even see it, so it was nothing that she did wrong. All she remembers is a big brown blur, and it knocked her back on her bike. And they said she might have passed out. She doesn't remember. Regardless, she wound up lying down on the bike, and the bike crashed in a ditch. She's actually incredibly lucky that didn't kill her. She fractured her pelvis, a couple of ribs, and I believe her scapula, something with her shoulder. I can't quite remember. And that one was a little bit less serious than the other injuries. Helmets save lives. Can only imagine what it would have been like without the helmet. She also had safety gear and didn't get any road rash or anything of that sort. But she's in the hospital, and it's been a really hard reminder that you can't take anything for granted. And, you know, you hear that. You hear that. And I would even say I've experienced it before. You have a death of someone, and you just don't think it's going to happen, and then it does. And for some reason, we can't live in that space of worrying about if everyone's going to die the next day. But at the same time, we have to accept that that is a reality. And with my mom, she has been a teacher for many years. She was 10 days away from retirement, and now she's not going to get to finish out her last school year. And it's changing all of the ideas about how she's supposed to spend her time, what she's supposed to do. Us kids all live in different states, and we were going to try to fly back at different times to help take care of her. And she's never been someone who likes to be taken care of. She's always done the taking care of others. So I'm looking at this as an opportunity to get closer to my mom, to be reminded how precious life is. The truth of the matter is I'm distracted, and I've been distracted by this grief, and thank God she's going to be okay. But at the same time, it's going to be a long road to recovery. And for a few days, I didn't get to talk to my mom because she had surgery. They had to put a couple screws in her pelvis. She just was too banged up to be talking. And so I got to talk to her for the first time yesterday, and it was so wonderful to hear her voice. But those 2 or 3 days in between where I couldn't talk to her and I only got to hear updates from other people about how she was doing were scary. You know, one of the steps is about confronting our own mortality and the mortality of everything. But do we ever really become comfortable with it? You know, we can confront it, but what does that mean? I guess this week was just a reminder that it is scary to be alive. And how do you not let that get in the way of you living your life? How do you get back on the bike, metaphorically and literally?
Well, and I keep thinking about how, you know, we've created these 10 steps and how important it is for us to continue to go through them as well. You know, we're not advocating only for other people to do them, but we're very much in this world. We're impacted by the life that we're leading. We're impacted by the ones we love, whether they're hurt or healthy or sick. We're impacted by this existential fear and the existential crises. Every day we check the news and it's worse. Trump has done something else to hurt human beings, and it's hard to keep track of everything that we're doing. Really, what we're trying to do with this podcast and with the Good Grief Network is remind you and remind ourselves that we're not alone and we're in this together, and that community is a way through the difficult things that we feel and the difficult things that we're facing. Your mom's kids are banding together and trying to come back home to help. I know that a lot of people visited her in the hospital. And so what we can do is take this strength that we might have as individuals and use that when we try to focus on collective grief. We just have to normalize that first, right? We have to say it's okay to feel the pain for the world. Losing a species, if we can really let that sink into our gut, can feel a lot like losing a loved one. I saw a stat the other day that says of all the mammals on Earth, 96% are livestock and humans, and only 4% are wild mammals. Obviously, there were a lot more wild mammals existing, and we have managed to kill off a lot of them. And there's no secret that we're experiencing a biodiversity crisis. But when I sit down and actually think about it, it hurts. And I look to Joanna Macy and a lot of other elders to help figure out ways to move through this grief, this feeling in the pit of your stomach where you can feel something's wrong, something's not right, and we have to do something about it, right? We can't just sit in this uncomfortable feeling. We have to actually metabolize it.
When we have families being torn apart by immigration, folks losing loved ones to police brutality and war, why is biodiversity worth grieving?
That's a good question.
It is. It's certainly worth grieving, but I don't think most of us have time to think about how that is connected to all of these other issues and why it matters.
Yeah. Well, and for me, that has come very natural to me. My connection to animals is what fuels a lot of my work. But feeling the weight of us destroying ecosystems, for anyone who knows how systems work or how evolution has worked, knows that essentially, what we evolved in, the conditions of the earth were just perfect for us to evolve. And when we start killing off other species, we are removing the ecological cycles that help us exist. In addition to changing the weather patterns, we're actually destroying the fisheries. And a lot of people eat fish. We rely on fish to survive in the good majority of the world. And with the rest of the ecosystems, basically what we're doing is we're destroying them and we're making this world inhabitable for our species. And so if you didn't mourn the loss of these individual species and the individuals within the species, I can sort of understand, because you're right, like we're very inundated by a lot of trauma right now at the human level. But if you're not mourning the loss of this very precious setting within which we evolved, then you're not really paying attention. The world in which we evolved is a very specific place. And in order for us to thrive as a species and for other species to thrive, we need to protect that. And we're simply not doing that. It causes me a lot of grief. Well, and I want to go back to what Amy was saying earlier about the importance of using grief as a tool, not to get stuck, but to move through and see what exists on the other side. And Rilke does a fantastic job in the poem, Let This Darkness Be a Bell Tower, which I will now read. Quiet friend who has come so far, feel how your breathing makes more space around you. Let this darkness be a bell tower, and you, the bell. As you ring, what batters you becomes your strength. Move back and forth into the change. What is it like, such intensity of pain? If the drink is bitter, turn yourself to wine. In this uncontainable night, be the mystery at the crossroads of your senses, the meaning discovered there. And if the world has ceased to hear you, say to the silent earth, I flow. To the rushing water, speak, I am. This poem is from Sonnets to Orpheus. Joanna Macy and Anita Burroughs translated this particular poem. I just want to take a second and emphasize the fact that grief can actually be a tool. Once we allow ourselves to feel the depth and the pain, there is beauty on the other side. And we can use the grief and what we've learned in the path of healing from grief as our strength. So let this darkness be your bell tower and you the bell. I also want to add specifically to Chelsea's question that grief isn't the only feeling that we're dealing with. I know that our title is the Good Grief Network, but we also want to take a look at all the heavy emotions that our culture tells us to look away from. So fear and anger and despair, which I think is different from grief.
Well, and what if it's a part of grief? Is we say grief because it includes, in my opinion, it includes all of the heavy emotions because it's a complicated emotion. Is it an emotion? Is grief an emotion? Because I don't know that it is.
Well, it's an experience, right?
Yeah. It's a complicated experience that, first of all, I don't think when you're in grief, you can sit there and translate everything you're feeling. Grief for me is something that doesn't require overanalyzing. It requires accepting, acknowledging, and processing or moving through and letting it open our hearts rather than close them.
And there are a lot of models to deal with grief. And ours is one. The work that reconnects is another. And there are many. And I would encourage anyone who's listening to this podcast either to dig deeper into our materials or the work that reconnects or any other model that gets people feeling feelings, even if they're hard feelings. We need to feel them in order to wake up and in order to really be alive in this moment. And even if you're not in it for saving the world, maybe you can be in it for just having the most meaningful experiences you can have while existing on this planet.
Also, our name Good Grief is punny because we think of grief as negative or bad. We wanted to challenge that notion. And then at the same time, good grief is an expression people say. And I don't know about you, but with the state of the world and the news, if you're not saying good grief to a lot of things, I think you're not paying attention.
If you're not outraged, you're not paying attention.
True.
I mean, it's pathetic the state in which we find ourselves, just politically and with regards to how we're operating as a culture here in the Western world. I saw a report that nearly 1,500 children have gone missing just because of errors on the part of ICE splitting apart people who are being deported. And we're not following up with where these kids are going. I also saw another report that some of those children are landing in the hands of sex traffickers. That is worth grief. That is worth grief. Can you sit with that? What if that was your kids? What if those were your children? What if your children were taken away from you?
I think part of the problem is that people can't empathize because we have created an other, a scapegoat. And so unless you are paying attention and still engaging with these difficult emotions, then you somehow tell yourself, well, it's not me. It's not happening to me directly.
And then what happens when it does?
That's the question. And that's why it's not okay that we're not looking deeper into these issues and we continue to look away.
Well, and I think that an even larger scapegoat has been the natural world, right? We can exploit and extract from different areas as long as the wealth is put in the United States. We have taken so much from the third world, in quotes, countries, and then taken all of the wealth and put them into our countries, into Europe, into the United States. And basically, we get to have all this glory and wealth while people in the third world will suffer. And there was also another report that recently came out, and I've seen several reports like this. So the one that I'll link in the show notes is the most recent. But there are others that say that the people who have done the least to affect climate change are the ones that are going to suffer the most because of it. That's insane. Who is the scapegoat in this situation, right? Like, we're just putting our problems in other people until it affects us.
Well, and we all want someone to blame. And so it seems like as individuals and as a culture, we're always looking to place the blame elsewhere. And then the opposite of that is people blaming themselves too much. We've talked about Derek Jensen's piece, Forget Shorter Showers, and how we sometimes put too much weight on ourselves as individuals while refusing to acknowledge that we're a part of these systems that we've been raised in, and it's very hard to live against these systems.
What's the first step to take to stop living in these systems, to stop contributing to these systems?
That's a great question, and I don't know that I have a specific answer because, as you know, we still are very much in the system. That being said, we choose to be countercultural in a lot of ways. We were not content working jobs that did not fulfill a bigger sense of meaning in our hearts. We're not content settling for a meaningless life.
Additionally, I think trying to figure out or coming to terms with or acknowledging our interconnectedness with not only everyone else on the planet, but everything in the planet, right? Like, if you even look far back into how we exist on this planet, we're all stardust. My point is, if you can actually come to terms with the fact that we are deeply interconnected and interdependent with all that exists in this world, I think that's the first step to sort of dropping out of these harmful systems. The second one is to have these types of conversations with your community. Have these conversations with your parents and your friends and your kids, and have them often. Normalize these conversations. Talk about climate change. Talk about what it means for 96% of our mammalian biomass to be made up by livestock and humans. You know, what does this mean? What are the implications? Start there.
Yeah, and the thing about community is you can start to share suggestions of ways that you're living counterculturally and positive. I was really excited to discover there's a new portable straw that you can carry on your keychain. And that is to try to reduce the amount of straws you use in a restaurant. And we've already tried to cut back, but every now and then, for instance, when I love iced tea and I get a giant thing of iced tea, I need a straw, otherwise I dump it all down the front of me. And so straws do have a practical purpose, so that's not to say that you should never use them, but how about we reimagine what that looks like in a way that's not so harmful to the ocean? And with as innovative as we are, I'm kind of amazed we didn't come up with this sooner.
Well, there hasn't been a need to, right? They've just been there for convenience. We haven't really understood the implications of straw or plastic waste in general. I have just now seen the media explode with problems with straws and plastic more generally. If you've seen the video where some researchers are pulling a straw out of a turtle's nose, if you see that, you will probably never use a straw again. And the last thing that I wanted to cover is the odd idea, because you brought up straws and plastic use, something that has died millions of years ago is buried deep within the ground. We have to use energy to extract it. We use more energy to make it into a straw or a fork or a plastic knife. We use it once, throw it away, and where does it go? To a landfill. Inevitably, all things you throw away don't really get thrown away. Away doesn't exist. It's just out of sight and out of mind. I'm ranting a little bit, but this is hugely important. We need to be cognizant of these types of things and of our actions. And these are the ways that we start pulling out of our systems that are failing us.
This episode feels heavier than some of our other ones. And to avoid it being kind of a rant, because even when I hear about these things, and I already know them, but it's just too hard to sit with it in my body 24/7. And so when I'm reminded of them, I feel despair, and despair is not a feeling that's going to make me take action. It's going to cause grief. It's going to require some self-care and some of the other things we've talked about. And so I'm wondering what is, I mean, we kind of talked about remedies last week, but what else is there to say in this discussion beyond this really heavy stuff? What else can we add? Why do we want to look at grief? Grief is heavy, and this episode has gotten rather heavy. When we're not afraid to look at our grief, and when we really, truly experience it and feel the weight of it, I think it makes us more human. It opens our hearts, because when you've felt deep grief and you see someone else in deep grief, you can't say they're other. Oh, they're not the same religion as me. Oh, they're not the same ethnicity as me. Because a human being in grief next to another human being in deep grief should be unifying, and I think is unifying if you're willing to go there. But if you stay afraid of grief and stay on the surface, I think fear controls your life much more.
Well, and not only that, but you miss the opportunity to see what's on the other side of grief, right? This very wonderful joy and lust for beauty and the ability to connect to other people who have felt grief. If you just let grief stagnate in your body, not only does it weigh you down, not only does it make you tired and steal your energy, it sacrifices the connections you can make to yourself, to other people, and to the natural world. And if we only have this one life, why would you sacrifice your ability to connect and experience beauty? You want to get through this grief. You want to process it. You want to feel it, and you want to see what's on the other side.
I'm thinking of yesterday, we went to the beach, and it was a wonderful day. It was beautiful sunshine. The lake was beautiful. Our dogs were happy. In fact, Gus was as happy as he ever is, digging and burying his toy. It was just a really beautiful day. And while we were sitting there at one point, I said, can you believe my mom's in a hospital bed and can't get up right now? Because it's such a shock to, especially with me being far away from her, it's kind of easy to put it in the back of my mind or forget. But for my mom, this is her right now. This is a struggle. And to think about that on the beach maybe sounds depressing, but I think it also helped me to appreciate the moment more, because you're reminded that you don't know what's going to happen. You might have a turkey fly in front of your face and get into a severe accident. We don't know, and we take so much for granted. And so those little reminders of I'm here now and this moment is beautiful, let me take a deep breath. It almost to me feels like a drug when I have that kind of awareness. It's like I just can't breathe deep enough to take it all in. It's beautiful. I want more of it. And that's where the human side of me wants to try to hold on to it or grasp it or control it. But we absolutely can't. And it's in that moment that I can surrender my need to control it and accept that I am in a place of beauty and I'm grateful. And yes, I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, but I have this moment. And why wouldn't I want to engage with it fully?
Thank you for sharing that. That's amazing. I'm going to read a quote by Joanna Macy.
Our work has been heavily influenced by Joanna Macy, and so she has come up quite a bit, and she will continue to come up quite a bit. She's one of our staple folks, kind of like Brené Brown.
So my quote from her says, "We are capable of suffering with our world, and that is the true meaning of compassion. It enables us to recognize our profound interconnectedness with all beings. Don't ever apologize for crying for the trees burning in the Amazon or over the waters polluted from mines in the Rockies. Don't apologize for the sorrow, grief, and rage you feel. It is a measure of your humanity and your maturity. It is a measure of your open heart. And as your heart breaks open, there will be room for the world to heal. This is what is happening as we see people honestly confronting the sorrows of our time." And so, as Amy mentioned, this episode has gotten a little heavy, but rest assured that there is beauty on the other side. And all we have to do is make a conscious effort to try to engage these heavier feelings and move through them and look forward to what's on the other side.
It makes me think of Andrew Solomon's quote, "The opposite of depression is not happiness, it's human vitality."
So Chelsea, I hope that we have answered why we dig into grief and why we think it's important to process collective grief and how it is different from losing a loved one, but also it's the same in many aspects. And we just want to encourage our listeners to feel the wide range of emotions that we are born with and that we have the capabilities of feeling. Let's not mute any one of them so that we might live to our fullest.
Thank you for listening to Why, a Good Grief Network podcast with your hosts, Amy Lewis-Rowe and Laura Schmidt. If you like what you hear, consider subscribing, commenting, leaving feedback, or just checking out our Patreon page. We'll come back at you next week with some more information and some more big questions. Thank you for listening.